Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. Well, coming up later in today's show, I'm joined by award-winning poet, memoirist, and essayist Diana Raab. Her new work is called The Guilt Gene. It's Raab's second book of poetry and has the straightforward, confessional tone that distinguishes her work from anybody else's. She never claims that her poetry provides the answers to life's questions, but it is her process of figuring things out.
You better watch out.
You better not cry.
You better not pout.
I'm telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
And welcome back. Welcome back to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we're joined now by my guest, Diana Raab. She's a Master of Fine Arts and is an award-winning memoirist, essayist, and poet. She teaches memoir writing, journaling, and poetry in the UCLA Writers Program and the Santa Barbara's Writers Conference. She also narrates and teaches workshops around the country. And her latest work is called The Guilt Gene. Diana, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pleased to have you here today, and thanks for joining us a little early today because we couldn't get reach our first guest today. Appreciate you jumping on there. I wanted to start with journaling because you talk a lot about journaling, and you say since the age of 10, you've been journaling yourself, and that's not the same as writing a diary at all. Tell us about your earliest experiences of journaling.
Well, when I was 10 years old, my grandmother, who was my caretaker because my parents worked full time, this was back in the 60s, had taken her life in my childhood home. And obviously it was a very traumatic experience for me, and back then children weren't talked to like they are so openly today, and my mother didn't really know how to help me cope, and so what she did so graciously is she bought me a journal, and I think she was also having her own difficulties mourning, and it was amazing how the journal just became my best friend and my confidant, and I was able to just pour all my emotions into the journal as my mother was busy with funeral plans and all sorts of things that happen after someone passes away unexpectedly. And I think so since then, journaling has been my way of coping with difficult situations and wonderful situations as well.
Right. And I read that you said you don't have to be a poet to write poetry. And journaling, a lot of the information that from your poems, for example, you can find in your journal. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, I'm really of the old school that I really do believe that we are much more creative when we have our pen in hand as opposed to composing on the computer. I mean, of course, sometimes we don't have a choice, but I do personally use my journal to draft all my first drafts, whether I'm writing an essay or a poem or even a book, you know, like the memoir that I wrote about my grandmother's life, Regina's Closet. I just find that I am much more creative that way. And adding to that, I do a lot of my writing on airplanes since my family, I live on the West Coast, my family's on the East Coast. I spend a lot of time in airplanes, and I don't know if it's just the lack of distraction of cell phones, and I do a lot of writing there as well.
You actually have a poem in your book about where you write, and it just about includes everywhere.
Actually, it's funny because I just returned from Paris. My son is doing a semester abroad there, and I really had the chance to investigate where, you know, some of our famous writers were, you know, Proust and Sartre and Balzac and all the cafes that they used to frequent to write their works. I actually spent time in those cafes, and I really understand how that, you know, sort of white noise and watching people and really does inspire writers. So I do love writing in cafes. I think that's probably next to airplanes, that's my second favorite place.
Yeah, and that's mine too. I do a lot of writing in coffee shops, I have to confess. And there is that stimulation of I don't know what it is, because there's all this noise going on in there, and yet I can totally zone it all out and still hear everything that's going on. It's very weird.
It's true. And you know what's amazing? I don't know what it's like in Seattle, but certainly in Santa Barbara, you know, you cannot sit in a Starbucks or, you know, without ordering a coffee. And in Paris, you can order a coffee at 9 a.m. and still you're still sitting there at 3 sipping on the same cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Nobody will come over and bother you. You could just, they're used to that. It's lovely.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about your new book. It's called The Guilt Gene. Where did inspiration for these poems come from?
Well, again, all my poems are based, that do come from my journal, and they're all narrative poems, they're all accessible poems, they're poems, my inspiration comes from everyday life, from things I see, things I feel, the things people tell me. I think I had read an article about the guilt gene and how people have it, and that sort of sparked a poem in me, and that led me to write this book. But I just take my poetry from the everyday, and that's why people really love reading it, is because I love the feeling people will email me and say, oh my God, I felt that. I know what you're feeling. I've been there, done that. And I, you know, poetry can just do that so succinctly, make people feel that you're part of their world.
Yeah, and I certainly can relate to that too, because I could relate to several of the poems that I read. And, you know, some of them, poetry gets a bad rap sometimes, I think. And I think schools have a lot to do with that. Because I remember when I was at school and, you know, I did classical English, of course, and we studied Shelley and Byron, you know, which are all great poets. But so much angst goes into trying to analyze a poem. That quite honestly put me off poetry for a long, long time.
You and many others, I must add.
Yeah, and some of your poems, I mean, I'm looking at one here that's My Ancestors Hated Camel Herders, and it's just three short lines. It's just very simple, makes a point, and, you know, has a very strong voice to it. So when you're putting your book together, how do you select which poems to put in? How do you go about selecting what works together?
Well, I have a wonderful editor that works with me on that, but basically it's just an intuitive sort of thing. You know, I have certain themes running through my work, you know, everything from loss to family to being a writer to the environment and to moving, because I've moved a number of times. And so I think there's themes that my poems naturally fall into their own place.
Mm. You say that you don't claim that you have everything figured out, that your poems are a process of figuring things out, sorting out your past, contemplating present. How difficult is it for you to bare your soul, so to speak? Does it come naturally to you?
Well, I think I've been forced to over the years. You know, I think writing... writers very often do write things right to figure out, and I really fell onto poetry sort of later in life. I've always been a nonfiction writer. I majored in journalism, and then I was a medical writer because I was a nurse in my past life. And so I came onto poetry because I was trying to make the transition from nonfiction to fiction, and which I never made, by the way, but I was hoping that it would help me. And actually, what poetry has done is it actually helped me with my writing in general, because it teaches you to really be more observant, to look at details, and to be succinct.
Mm. Do you have a? Can you read a poem to us now? Can you share one of your poems
Absolutely.
With us? We'd love to hear that.
Sure. I'm going to read The Library, which is a short poem. It's called The Library. In the happy moments of my childhood, a public library sits, nestled between a department store and a post office. The only place I could find peace from the yelling and screaming at home, and the fallout shelters at school. That little library card bearing my name beneath a lamination could protect me more than my words of my father, who would take me onto his lap, swear to me that everything would be okay. In the end, books would save me. Knowledge is the only thing that cannot be stolen away.
Mm. What prompted that poem?
I spent a lot of time in my childhood in libraries, and I love libraries. And I think also the fact that my ancestors were in World War II, and I was always told that, you know, they've lost everything in the war, and they always told me, my parents, my grandparents, that everything that they ever had was taken away, but not knowledge. And so I think that's the wisdom of my ancestors that prompted that poem.
Mm, interesting. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier your Regina's Closet. Is it Regina?
Yes.
Yeah, Regina's Closet, Finding My Grandmother's Secret Journal. It's a memoir that came out in 2007, and it won the 2009 Mom's Choice Award for Adult Nonfiction and the 2009 National Indie Award for Excellence in Memoir. Tell us a little bit about Regina's Closet.
Regina's Closet was a book that I started working on when I was doing my graduate work in nonfiction, and it was prompted by me sort of, I had to do a thesis, and I was looking through my files, and I came up with my grandmother's journal, which was passed on to me probably about, I'd say about 30 years after she passed away. My parents moved from my childhood home, and basically it was a journal that was typed. She was a very, very educated woman, but she journaled her life in World War I. And so what I did in the memoir was I contrasted her life with my life, and I studied, there's a big World War I backdrop in the book, and I discussed our relationship and everything that we had in common, how she taught me how to type my first story on a Remington typewriter, and some of us will remember those.
Sit up and beg ones.
I actually collect typewriters.
Oh, do you?
Here in my studio, and I'm looking at all. They do inspire me. I can't say that I was just reading that. I can't remember. One contemporary writer uses a typewriter to still do his manuscripts. I've not written any manuscripts on. Yeah, McCarthy, that's who it was, yeah.
Okay, there's a very famous screenwriter who uses an old sit-up and beg.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
All the power to them, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, really. Got strong index fingers.
Yeah.
So the book really is about paralleling your lives, and where does it end? You say it has a backdrop of World War One.
Well, the book opens with me finding my grandmother dead, actually, in my childhood home, and then I discover her journal, and it ends sort of with her as an inspiration for me, and the relationship between grandchild and grandparent, and how wonderful that was, and how much she taught me about life in just the 10 short years that I was with her.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about memoir, because I was looking at your blog, and I was going to bring this up anyway, but you wrote about this on your blog, so it was perfect. Most of us are familiar, I think, with James Frey, who wrote A Million Little Pieces, passing off basically a fictionalized story as memoir. And then right after him, there was another fellow who wrote a love story about he and his wife in a Jewish refugee camp, or in the war, and that turned out to be fictionalized too. Mm-hmm. Memoir, as I've always understood it, and you say this too, there is your memory as you recall it. Because if you've got siblings, we all know we each remember a different version of the same event, right?
Exactly.
So, talk a little bit about the difference between memoir and biography, if you would.
Well, as a baseline, the difference between memoir and biography is typically a biography is written about someone that is more or less famous. Let's say you know either a politician or a actor, actress, a well-known, a celebrity, if you will, and a memoir can be written by anyone, and a biography also is about an entire life. A memoir, on the other hand, is about a slice of life. A memoir will have a theme. You know, for example, The Glass Castle, and then Tobias Wolff, This Boy's Life. They all have a theme running through it. It's not about their whole lives, but it's a theme. And it's the writer's emotional truth. And as you say, your emotional truth will be totally different than a sibling's, but that's fine. You're writing your emotional truth.
Mm-hmm. And you had some great, almost everybody I run into at events and conferences, especially when they're focused around writing, says they have a memoir in them. It's one thing to have good stories in this. It's a whole other thing to put them down on paper. And I know that you teach at the Santa Barbara's conference workshop and at other places too. How do you advise people to go about beginning to get a memoir, enough information together to start their memoir?
Well, there's usually an inciting moment that the author will feel, something that I usually have them start with a moment in their life that changed them. And for me, it was, you know, my grandmother's death. And usually that would be a good sort of starting point to see where the writing goes. And the journal comes in really handy with the memoir because it's a place where you can capture memories, write about your past, and then organization of it is the tricky part, and that comes later. But just getting the writing on the page is the important thing.
Mm. You have a blog posting about baby boomers, memory, and memoir. And I thought this was great because I guess I am a baby boomer on the bottom end there, but I've been having a terrible problem with memory lately. Oh my gosh, I walk from room to room and can't remember from one second to the next what I'm looking for.
Sounds so familiar.
Like I'm turning into my mother.
That's right.
But you have this great post on there. It's called Baby Boomers, Memory and Memoir. And you talk about some ways that we can stimulate memory. And I thought some of these ideas were great. So I wonder if we can talk about that a little.
Mm-hmm.
And you started off by saying that you were having issues with your memory. So what did you decide to do about that to try and sharpen things
yeah,
up a little?
A while ago, I'm trying to remember what I wrote. But I think basically of course, the first thing you do is you go to the health food store and you see what can they offer me here. And so I think I started, you know, the route of the ginkgo and then found a few other herbs that would help me. And then I also took a course online about memory, and that sort of helped me as well. So
one of the things I thought was really good, because there's something about music that instantly transports me back to wherever I was at the time that was out, or I was listening to it frequently. And one of the things you say is play music from the time period you're writing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. I, matter of fact, when I was writing my book, I had a lot of music from the 60s and 70s that I was always had playing. And I also had photographs also, or memory joggers as well. I always had a photograph of my grandmother sitting on my desk. And that was fabulous.
Mm. And even you say prepare foods from the time period you're writing about. Because we all have, especially if you're writing about somebody like a grandmother, there are certain foods that instantly remind me of my grandmother. I'm sure that's true for most people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's anything that will jog your memory. And, you know, sometimes you'll just start writing about one thing and then it'll just spark another thought. And, you know, that's the advice that I give my students in the class is, you know, just because you start writing about, let's say, you know, the day a sibling was born, doesn't mean you have to stay on target or on task with that in your journal. Just let it go. Wherever your thoughts go is fine. That's part of the joy of a journal. There's no right or wrong way to do it.
Right, right. Well, you talk about using journaling for wellness, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about that because you actually teach a workshop called The Healing Notebook. My guest is Diana Raab. She's an essayist, memoirist, and poet, award-winning, I should say. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be back in just a minute or so.
Thank you.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Diana Robb. And she's an award-winning poet, memoirist, and essayist. And we're talking about her new work, amongst others, called The Guilt Gene. Although I just found out during the break that she's actually had four books come out this year. She's been a busy lady. And you're walking around in a trance right now, I assume. And I said before the break, we'll talk about wellness and journaling. But before we get into that, Diana, I'm going to ask if you'd read another poem to us, please.
Sure. I'm going to read one that I frequently read at my readings, which people really can relate to these days because of the security at the airport, and it's called Security Check. Today I move along the snaky line, lift my suitcase onto a conveyor belt, lined with ziplocks displaying personal items and computers containing my secrets. I slip off my new shoes that surveyed streets of an unknown city. I'm tired and just want to go home. A guard with cold eyes wands my newly reconstructed breast and the knee replaced that was the result of a drunk driver who crashed into me, leaving me lame for life and killing himself. On the other side of the screening area, a woman caresses my carry-on bag, interrogating the water bottle inside. I place my hand on my heart and apologize for such a sin, hydrating my body as per doctor's orders. I toss the bottle into the trash bin, zip up my bag, and the guard begins to discuss the book she passed in the hunt for my defending item. I see we are not so different as we cross the moving walkway of words. Yeah, I was so irritated. You know, here I am, I'm exhausted, I want to go home, and this guard is going through my bag, and she sees a book that she loves. I'm like, how dare you? How dare you discuss what's in my bag? You're supposed to be looking for something that's, you know, going to hurt someone. Oh, boy. But I have to tell you, once my book actually saved me. I had I live about 2 hours from the major airport here, and I forgot my license at home, and so there I am at the security line, no license. And but you know what saved me is my book, which had my name on it and a picture.
Oh, really?
And a bottle of prescription pills.
Oh,
so
interesting.
You just never know. I got lucky, I think.
Interesting.
Now, well, I don't travel without my books.
No, good idea. And I tell you what I don't do when I travel. I don't let my mother's cat sleep in my suitcase anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
Because when I lived in San Diego, I came back exhausted through LAX. And I usually travel straight through, but for some reason I'd had to take two separate planes because of scheduling. And so I was exhausted when I got to LAX. And it's packed, absolutely packed with people. And as I'm pulling my trolley off the gurney and walking towards security, everybody starts parting and looking at me. And I'm like, what's happening? And I look around and there's a policeman right behind me and a sniffer dog going berserk over my suitcase.
Oh, no.
But apparently the dog's behavior was such that he could tell it wasn't drugs or anything. Because the first question he asked me was, do you have candy in the bag or have you been around animals? And I said both.
Oh, my goodness.
So no more cats sleeping in my suitcase while I'm traveling.
Oh, my gosh. That's hysterical.
So before the break, I said we'd talk about journaling because you do teach these workshops, and you taught one called the Healing Notebook. And I know from personal experience that this can be very beneficial to journal. Some people see the value in it and some people don't. I wonder if you just share with us why you think it works, and does it work for everyone?
Well, That's a really good question. I mean, I think for the most part, it does work. The danger we get into sometimes is if people have something really traumatic happening to them and they write and they write and they write and they don't feel better, they start feeling worse. That's when I suggest to stop writing. But for the most part, writing does empower us, does help us come to resolution, and it could be very calming as well.
Mm. Well, studies do show that if we, there's something about that action, as you said earlier, when you write your work longhand. And I've interviewed, not for the radio show, but for a series I used to work on, interviewed many Hollywood screenwriters who, believe it or not, write their screenplays longhand. Because there's something about that mind, heart, connection, and coming out the arm on the end, you know, through a pen to the paper. And studies do show that that it is beneficial for people.
Right.
Yeah. So do you ever get writer's block?
Well,
is there such a thing?
Not very, you know, there is controversy. Is there such a thing? I slow down. I don't ever call it writer's block. Sometimes I do go through phases where I'm just in a reading mode, and I just don't feel like writing. But when I'm in that zone, so to speak, I will still every morning just write at least for 20 minutes, whether it's a letter to someone or if it's just in my journal, just to sort of get the creative juices going.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's important. But, you know, I don't think you can be a good writer without being a good reader. So it's very important that I actually force myself to balance, because otherwise I'd be writing all day long.
Right. There's that zone thing going on, right?
Right.
And I know Ray Bradbury says in Zen, I think his book is called Zen and the Art of Writing, and he talks in there about, you know, there's this image of the writer being a recluse, and that doesn't work. You've got to get out there and experience life to be able to write about things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a preferred process for you when you write? Do you have a specific process? I know you said you write just anywhere, so I'm assuming you're one of those writers that can kind of go with the flow and events.
I do go with the flow. My most productive way is to work on a few projects at once, and I guess because I get bored easily,
mm-hmm.
which is probably why I had all these books come out this year. And because I write in multiple genres, it's easier. If I was writing two novels, that would be trickier. But, you know, I might have a book of poetry going. I went to Africa last year, and I'm working on my next book of poetry, which is African poems. So I've got that on my desk, and I'm also working on a biography of someone else. And that's how I work. I feel like one project feeds the other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have a friend that she's a novelist, and she's been working on the same novel for 6 years, and I think that would make me absolutely crazy.
Mm. Yes, it would.
But that's me. You know, her way is different, and everyone is different, and as long as you're comfortable with your way, that's what's important.
Mm. Do you have a favorite thing to write? Is it essays, memoir, poetry?
Again, it depends on my mood. Mm. I write essays, although it's not one of my favorite genres, because I find that I can't be as creative as I want to be. My favorite genre is poetry, and, you know, poetry and memoir, I would say. And a lot of my poems are memoir, so it's sort of, they overlap.
Mm. So who's inspired you? Which writers have inspired you?
Well, I think Anna Eastman is the writer that has inspired me the most, primarily because she was an avid journaler, and both of us actually started journaling out of trauma. You know, she started journaling also about the age of 10 or 11 when her father left the family, and I started journaling when my grandmother passed away. So I feel a certain closeness to her, which is why I dedicated my last book of poems to her. And I've read all her journals, and when I'm sort of in a slump, and I don't want to use the term writer's block, when I'm just sort of like not inspired, I will pull out her journals and read them because they're honest, they're straightforward, they're warm, they're. I just feel like I'm right there with her.
Mm. And that's Anna Eastman. Did you, when you're teaching, do you find that there are people that are naturally creative? This, again, is another controversial subject. People say you can teach creativity and others say, no, you can't, you're born with it. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think you're born with a certain amount of creativity, which can be nurtured or not nurtured. I've got a niece and a nephew who, you know, they're teenagers, and they just have this affinity to want to write. You know, I'm in communication with them, and they feel like that's what they want to do. And so I think, you know, they were, I think, always wanting to do that. They were born with it. But it can be nurtured and, you know, worked with, sure.
Mm. And as a writer yourself, what's the best career advice that you've received? Or the worst. Give us the best.
Well, you know, right? For the most part, writers write because they have to write, not necessarily because they want to write. I don't know if that's advice, but it's... I would say, in terms of advice... write about what inspires you, write about what you're passionate about, because that'll be the best writing that comes out of you.
Mm. Well, I really appreciate you being with us today, Diana. I certainly enjoyed reading your poems, and I'm not somebody who reads a lot of poetry. I do sometimes go to poetry readings, but I did enjoy reading them a lot. Well, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
I would just like to leave them with, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me, and I would just like to say, read, write.
If you're not doing it, then you're not a writer, right?
There you
go. If you're
go.
Not writing, you're not a writer. Thanks so much for being with us. And I'm going to give out Diana's website. It's dianarob.com. Diana and Rob is R-A-B. Did I even say that right, Diana?
What? You did
oh,
perfectly.
Okay. DianaRobb.com. So it's RAAB.com. And her book, again, The Guilt Gene. It's a book of 60 poems. And I want to thank each of you for being with us today. You know where to get hold of me if you have feedback on today's show, 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or at our special listener voicemail. It's not manned, but there is a voicemail box that you can leave a message at, 206-414-6159. And then, of course, again, you can reach us through our website, conversationslive.net. And before I go, I have to apologize because we did have a glitch on the website last week. It is resolved now, so we'll be updating it this week. It wasn't updated last week. Thanks to Eric Ryder for keeping us live, literally, today. And we'll be back next week with more Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum says it's easy to create your own back-to-basics prevention plan for better health. She's a holistic clinical pharmacist who spent valuable time in China gathering expertise in herbal research and global health solutions. Also, Dr. Michael Wayne shares his 12-step plan to start living a low-density lifestyle today. That's all coming next Monday at noon Pacific. Find more information on conversationslive.net.